So I'm here in my room. My computer is turned on in front of me with my microphone set up. There's a notepad open with some notes about my podcast. It's time to rewind. Looks like they're open to the 17th scene of Memento that starts in color at 39 minutes and 8 seconds, with Leonard having flashes of his attack, and ends at 43 minutes and 56 seconds, with Leonard showing a Polaroid of a bloody dot to Natalie. There's also a Skype window open. Oh, hang on. Who is this?
Bubba Weed, it's Eric. Will you open the door?
Oh, of course. I'm sorry about that. And who are you?
Me? Hey, man. It's Nick. How you been?
Oh, hey. It's been a little while.
A little too long, some may say.
Yeah, so it's good to have you on here to talk about Memento. I have, a lot of the scenes that I had split up. The guests that I invited, I had them choose the scenes, but whenever I noticed that this, I was kind of halfway through filling them up, and I noticed that this scene was still open, and I thought that you would be a perfect guest to talk about this group of scenes, as I think these are a lot of fun, and this whole like mini action movie in the middle of this like noir drama is just a lot of fun. But before we get into today's scene, why don't you go ahead and do you remember whenever you first like what's your history with Memento? Do you remember when you first saw it?
For me, it was probably in college or just after college. It was that time where, you see Pulp Fiction, you see a movie like this, you see Clockwork Orange, you see all these films that start to have developed like a cult following or some that are just out of the ordinary. It was I'm fairly certain this was my first film experience with like nonlinear storytelling. It always stuck out to me. I picked up the DVD when it came out, and it looked like the file folder, and some one of them had like different color paper clips. And I can remember on the DVD menu, if you selected like certain words in the right direction, it would actually play the film linearly from the quote unquote beginning to end. And I always thought that was very, very cool.
Yeah, it's we've brought that up a few times. I know Lisa is not she's not a very big fan of watching it li watching this film linearly, and I think that it's worth watching once.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
But let's go ahead and jump into this scene. This is actually the first time we start to see flashbacks of this attack that happens. And it's almost like presented almost horror movie-esque with these quick flashes punctuated by, his wife gasping and these like horror screech noises. And it starts off a little vague. We can hear the woman gasping, but the visual is unclear because it's just this like white. You can kind of tell it's plastic, but that's all you can tell. And then we get like the bathroom tile, and then it's not until after the third screech that we can make out this woman's mouth behind a plastic sheet, and we kind of start getting the picture of what's going on. And then we get these just, this very quick, like it's literally just two frames of someone in a blue jacket and a white ski mask before we see Leonard get his head smashed into the bathroom mirror, and then this jar of these bright blue, I think they're probably Epsom salts, spilling onto the floor, which is, it's kind of like, I feel like it's representing kind of his brain or his memories just spilling out onto the floor.
Yeah, it almost felt like a weird fever dream that was hitting him as soon as he had a chance to hit like a deeper level of sleep, not just that surface level, but almost like that REM, like he's so tired he just jumped into it. And I can remember it being just so jarring because everything else is cut fairly traditionally, nothing, too rapid or too quick. And then all of a sudden we just get bang, bang, bang. We get these images back to back, and the tone of the film kind of changes a little bit.
And then we get this slight repeat of the black and white narration But there's this like low driving beat in the background music that's kind of warning us that this isn't exactly a safe space. Plus the fact that, you know, whenever he's waking up, he was in a very odd position, kind of like he might have passed out.
Yeah, because it's almost like every scene he kind of starts with, we're just waking up in a new place.
Hmm.
You know, we're kind of waking. We're coming to a realization with him of like, wait, where are we? Who are we? And trying to remember our place, even though these black and white scenes in between, they're not very long, right? I mean, 2 minutes is probably the longest one out there. But it's still.
I think the longest one. Well, I mean, the longest one is the one at the end that transitions into color. But I think the next longest one is like the one of the Sammy Jenkins, which I think that's like a good 5 minutes, maybe.
Well, they don't feel that long.
Yeah, I mean, we're doing some of these sessions out of order, and just last night I recorded on the shortest black and white scenes, and the shortest one is 11 seconds, and then there's one that's 13 seconds. So yeah, they get pretty short around this time. It's like, especially like during this action scene, because it's like they want to get back to this action scene as quickly as possible.
It wants to keep that kind of tension and somewhat adrenaline too.
And to Nick's point also, I mean, when I just wake up from a nap, or if I just fall asleep unexpectedly when I'm not planning to, when I wake up, I'm disoriented and I'm sort of like, wait, huh, what happened? What time is it? Where am I? Kind of thing. And I don't have the short-term memory problems that Leonard has. So, you know, he's waking up here in this bed pretty much how I would be if I was in an unfamiliar place. And so just adding in the amnesia to it, his brain is circling back to usual thoughts of, okay, I'm in a hotel room. Well, I'm sure there's the Bible. That's always there, right? And he finds the gun, and it's sort of like he doesn't expect to find anything in there except the Bible. And so it's kind of a little convenient plot-wise that he opens up the drawer. Why is he opening the drawer? What is the in-universe reason if he's not expecting to find anything in there? Has he opened drawers in the past and found things in there? I don't think so, or else he wouldn't say, I don't think there's going to be anything in there.
Yeah, well, I think the fact that he says that, and the fact that, you know, they show him doing that earlier in the movie, that this is part of his wake-up routine. Like, even though 9 times out of 10, there's nothing there, it's just one of these things that he's trained himself to do through this repetition, that anytime he wakes up in an unfamiliar place, the first thing to do is to check the drawers. And in his mind, he doesn't expect to find anything. And honestly, I think that's why he put the gun there, because he knows that future him is going to find it because of that routine.
Mm-hmm.
And I also think that this is another moment of him waking up at the beginning of one of these color scenes. And I'm sure we've talked about this before, because it's a common thing for this film to do, because waking up is a kind of the closest touch point for a normal person to sympathize and empathize with what he's going through, like, or relate to what he's going through. Just that feeling of waking up. And this, I think this film does it 3 or 4 times where we see him waking up at the beginning of a scene and go through his like little, wake up routine, which it's different depending on the situation, because, right, you know, we have him waking up with Natalie. We have him waking up, not with the escort, but with the escort in the other room, and we have him waking up here. And I believe there might be one other time where he's waking up, but I can't think of that one off the top of my head right now.
Yeah, I think you're right. And it also plays to a point that, you know, he makes throughout the film about how he's different. He's organized. He has that routine. He has something that kind of keeps him with that repetitive motion over and over again. So it's fun. I never picked up on kind of that mindset until you brought that up. That's a really good point.
Yeah, and then as he's going through this routine and he sees the gun, and then he starts to hear something, and so he opens the closet to find a man that he doesn't recognize, bloodied and taped up like a hostage, right before Teddy starts knocking on the door. And, you know, just to think of how he got himself, like, if you try and put your mind to the first time that you saw this, and just to see him put in this situation and watch him struggle to figure out how he got himself into this situation, it really creates just an interesting moment in the film.
Yeah, this is really good face acting by Guy Pearce here, because we've talked a bit about the sort of blank slate that he has a lot with his face in this movie. And it's very subtle here. It's just for like a second, but you can see that tweak of confusion of what the hell am I looking at? What the hell happened here? And it stands out even though it's so quick, because it is different from the bulk of the movie of how his face comes across.
Yeah. And then right after that, we get, you know, I think some more great face acting with Joey Pants just kind of mugging it up in the fisheye lens through the peephole.
That's great.
and it really, like, there's a just this great, this interaction between the seriousness of the situation, but there is quite of humor played throughout this entire scene. I mean, this and even this entire group of scenes, but especially even just in this scene. And a lot of it is brought in by Teddy, by Joey Pantoliano. And if we do just get this back and forth between kind of these important drama moments, because, you know, we see Teddy, or Leonard sees Teddy through the people, and as an audience, we know who Teddy is, but Leonard immediately goes back to his, like, safety net and, you know, flips through his Polaroids before he sees Teddy. And then I think it's great how he just completely switches modes. And then whenever he opens the door, he is calm, cool, collected Leonard. And he just, you know, says, "Hi, Teddy."
Which he usually doesn't do, by the way. Like, he usually, there's a, you know, more of a, "You're Teddy," or, you know, it, like, it's not as familiar usually. Mm. And I think it's probably just he's a bit thrown off because of Dodd in the closet, I think. And so it's taking him an extra moment to get himself collected.
Yeah, and I think he's also, because he's not sure, because he knows that he knows Teddy, but he doesn't know anything about Teddy. So he is still playing it cool and, you know, hoping that Teddy does not find this hostage in the closet to a certain extent, because he doesn't know how Teddy is going to react or why Teddy is here.
And you can even see, like, when Joey Pants comes in, immediately plops down on the chair, is talking, there's a couple seconds, there's two, maybe three of them, where Guy's kind of looking at him and turns away in that, like, calm, keeping it collected, eyeballs the closet, and then kind of brings his eyes back around. And then we start to see, you know, Joe Pantoliano's character notices what's going on, cracks a little joke. But it's that subtle face, like Eric brought up. Usually it's that slate, but then it's a little something right there that he's like, "All right, keep calm. You know, there's something over there. Here's where we're going to focus. And now let's start to figure out where we are."
Yeah, it kind of makes me think of, you know, the more extreme version, and also kind of played for laughs. If either of you have seen Turning Red, that's the Pixar movie with the red panda. And there's a moment where, you know, the main character has all this basically like pop culture contraband hidden under her bed. And then her mom comes in and she's extremely nervous, and she's like, basically telling herself, "Do not look under the bed, do not look under the bed." And then her eyes just very quickly look down and then look back up. And then her mom immediately looks under the bed and finds everything that she's trying to hide. It's kind of like a less extreme version of that.
Probably no body. I'm going to assume there's no bodies under the bed.
No, it's just a bunch of like boy band memorabilia stuff. Yeah, this is you know, it's a lot of fun. And again, with the humor where Teddy initially thinks that it's, you know, people having sex in the next room over. You know, you got some amorous neighbors.
I'm glad that he said amorous neighbors like that, too. Usually someone would be a little more just plain or even crude about it. It's like, yeah, there's two people over there knocking boots or what have you. But to kind of be like sly and say amorous neighbors, like I always really dug that line.
Yeah. I feel like this scene in general, we really get a brief glimpse of how Teddy really feels about this relationship between him and Leonard. Because we know that to a certain extent, Teddy is using Leonard, but and I know in interviews, Joey Pantoliano has said that he feels like Teddy, you know, really does like Leonard. That's why he doesn't just up and steal his car, because at this moment it's the Jag is his car, even though he really wants to get the money and the gun out of the trunk. But he never just straight up takes it from him. And in this, we kind of get a little bit of that friendship. And even though Leonard finds himself in this situation, you know, Teddy doesn't, you know, Teddy's still able to make light of the situation. He's still able to crack jokes. And he's still kind of in with Leonard 100%.
Absolutely. And to the point of cracking jokes, I'm sure a lot of people are similar to me in this. If I find a joke that works good on someone, I'm going to want to use it again on someone else, and I'm going to keep using it over and over again with every new person I meet to try to keep getting that laugh, because I feel it's a crowd pleaser. But as he says, he just gets to keep this telling the same thing over and over with Leonard. that's great. Another one of the subtle parts of the humor of this particular scene.
Yeah, and even though he is also kind of talking about the struggles of being Leonard's friend, because Leonard is the one that called him over here needing his help. And by the time Teddy got there, Leonard has completely forgotten about the call and why he called him there in the first place. And if Dodd wasn't there tied up in the closet, then Leonard would have no idea what he needed from Teddy unless he happened to write it down. And then we get this great, I think it's this great moment, this two shot with Leonard and Teddy just trying to figure out if either one of them knows who Dodd is or what he's doing there. And it's just great how they go back and forth in this a bit of, you know, it's another great bit of comedy. It's like, you know, do you know who he is? No, I don't know who he is. Why would I? And then they both come to the logical conclusion to ask Dodd, because out of the three of them, he's the only one that has some semblance of what's going on, even though, which is so bizarre whenever you take a step back to think about it. It's like, you know, ask the hostage what's going on.
I think it's very interesting too, that Dodd, when Leonard does say, you know, who are you, you know, what's your name? Who did this to you? And Dodd doesn't seem as confused as I think someone should be in that situation, that if you just had what we're going to find out in the next couple of scenes, this encounter, and the person that did this to you is now coming to you and saying, who did this to you? You got to think he's, you know, I mean, you're like, you know, what the hell is going on here? And to tie in a movie that Nick mentioned earlier in the episode, Pulp Fiction, I feel like Brett's more confused by Jules interrogating him in Pulp Fiction than Dodd is here by Leonard asking him these questions. You know, when Brett's saying, what, and Jules shoots him in Pulp Fiction. I would have expected more of that from Dodd here, to just be like completely bewildered. Instead, he's just, he answers a matter-of-factly, you did this, and that's it. There's not really much bewilderment on his part.
That's a good point. I feel like just because Dodd is such a minor character that I feel like they probably went that way just for, you know, to keep things going, for pacing, just to not draw out that moment with Dodd. And I was listening a bit to the commentary. I didn't find a you know, there wasn't a ton of stuff that he talked about, but one thing that he did talk about a few times is how, you know, this is a lower budget movie, and they were kind of pressed for time in a lot of ways. And they shot this, all the scenes in this hotel room in the course of like just a single day or so.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I think just one, maybe 2 days, but it was a very short period of time. And they also had like the fight scene. And so that's kind of why they were a little bit limited in, with some of the shots that they were doing. And so it's hearing that, it doesn't surprise me that they just kind of went with this shorter version without drawing out Dodd's scene any more than that.
The nice thing, it works. It's just that right amount. It doesn't shift tonally how we feel. Yes, there's a little bit of light humor coming in there, but it doesn't take away from the seriousness of the situation or just the confusion of the situation. And I think it just works well. The only thing that always kind of threw me off is a little bit funny is Joe Pantoliano was kind of exasperated, come down, plopping on the chair. He's kind of freaked out a little bit by a person in the closet. But then later, when he goes and pulls a gun out, he's like not at all bothered by it. He's like, oh, yeah, like, of course you would have that. It'd be no different than like, hey, I found a stick of gum in my pocket. And I always thought that was interesting.
Yeah, I think that does a lot of things. It does kind of speak to Teddy's character and his relationship with Leonard that we'll find out more of as the movie goes on. But I also think it's interesting that Teddy says, why would I have a gun? Because, I mean, he's a police officer. And I think, you know, revisiting the movie, and you might even forget, but the reason that Teddy doesn't have a gun is because it's in the trunk of the Jag. But he's just saying this matter-of-factly, you know, why would I have a gun?
Huh. I'm just putting that together now. Then, yeah, that would have happened by then. He wouldn't have had it.
Well, maybe in this specific case, he rightfully assumes Leonard doesn't know he's a cop. And with him not being fully aware of the situation of exactly what's going on here, maybe he doesn't want Teddy to be aware that he's a cop, just until he figures out exactly what's going on with this guy in the closet. I mean, he says to him, you know, I'm not going to help you kill that guy, which is interesting considering what we learn later on in the movie is the relationship between the two of them. Because it's sort of like, you know, he's only okay with helping him kill people under certain circumstances. So he needs to know the circumstances before he fully reveals to Leonard what he may or may not be willing to help him do and who he really is.
Yeah, he even at one point asks if this is John G.
Right. Because if he says it is John G., then it's, oh, okay, we've got to get back into this mode now.
Yeah. And, like, around all this, I also like that we get to see Leonard jumping back into his, like, analytical brain as he, you know, looks around and he, you know, he finds Dodd's picture in the Polaroids, and he also figures out that this is Dodd's room. And at that moment, he's ready to just leave. But until, you know, Teddy talks him out of it. And, you know, he, like you said, he brings up the police. And I do think that that's relevant that, yeah, at this point he's in, you know, yes, I'm your friend, Teddy. I'm not a cop because of everything that they're doing. Because I think if Leonard thought that Teddy was a cop, then he wouldn't be so open with everything that they're doing.
Right.
Agreed.
And then we get a few more moments of Teddy trying to get the Jag away from Leonard. And first he suggests that they steal Dodd's car to teach him a lesson. And at first, I mean, let me ask you before I get into, you know, what I think of that. Like, what do you guys think about him pushing this let's steal Dodd's car angle that Teddy's going for?
I think it's because Teddy knows what's in the trunk of that car. And even when he gets out there, he's like, give me your keys to your car. He's like, no, you take your car. Because I think given the chance, he would take the car and either get everything out of the trunk or he would just take the car and leave because it's not like, you know, he's going to go remembering anyway. So I that's where I always was. He's like, he just wants to get to his car.
I mean, I think Nick kind of hit it on the spot there. I think he's on point.
Yeah, I agree. I think that it is kind of him thinking three steps ahead, but I also think that this is, again, bringing back to Teddy's friendship with Leonard, because he's not just going to, like, steal Leonard's jag and then, you know, give him 20 minutes and then come back and find out that, you know, Leonard's forgot about it already. But he wants to get Leonard to steal Dodd's car. And then once he takes the Polaroid of Dodd's car and, you know, writes "my car" on that picture, then he will get the Jaguar after that. Like, you know, he might still steal it, but he won't feel so bad about it because he's left Leonard with a new car, a different car. And so it doesn't feel as much like stealing. And I think it's interesting that he also, like, he's unfazed whenever he doesn't get the key. He just, you know, plays it off with another joke. You know, he's like, "That's easy for you to say. You're the one with the jag."
And it works too, because that line does make me smile.
And then they, you know, they figure out what to do with Dodd, and they just kind of send him off. And I think that it doesn't really matter within the context of this move, like the timeline of this movie. But what do you think about the fact that Dodd is kind of this loose end for the future for Leonard and Natalie? Like, what do you think Dodd does after the events of this movie? Do you think he does leave them alone, or do you think, you know, he comes back twice as hard? Does he go after Natalie? Does he try to go after Leonard? What do you guys think?
I think he stays away. I think that he got beat pretty good by Leonard, and I think he probably realizes it's just not worth it. You know, this guy, I took him on, and he kicked the crap out of me, and I'm not pressing my luck again.
I'd have to second that, especially when at first, you know, it's just Leonard. But then he sees that, you know, there's this Teddy character, there's someone here that's willing to help him. He's now going to be twice as likely to not come back, because he knows there's at least another person in there. And then who knows who Natalie is also going to be able to kind of scrounge out and get him the help out. You know, you got that old man at the bar being, you know, an old man and everything, but we don't know what he's about. She could try to rope him in there too, so.
Yeah, and then, you know, after they drop Dodd off, we get another quick scene with Leonard and Teddy. And Teddy, once again, he brings up the fact that, oh, they should have stolen Dodd's car, which, from my point of view, I think that that does two things. One, it partly is just him being disappointed that his plan didn't work. But I also think that him bringing that up again, helps show that Teddy isn't exactly a stand-up character. That, you know, he was very willing to just steal this guy's car. And he does have, you know, his reasons, but he's, you know, he's a dirty cop. But, like, we know at this point in the movie, we know that he is a police officer. Yeah. But I do also like the addition of, you know, we get even more humor. I love Leonard quipping, like, you know, they have this very friendly banter with each other, with Leonard quipping about Teddy's sinister mustache.
Yeah, you know, I mean, through it all, you know, this is kind of a bit of a buddy movie, you know, between these two guys. You know, there's a definite, despite the seriousness of what's going on and what ends up happening to Teddy at the hands of Leonard, there's, you know, there's a bit of that buddy movie, buddy, one of them is literally a cop, buddy cop kind of goofiness that goes on between the two of them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because in a weird way, you know, Guy Pearce's character is the straight man. And Teddy and kind of everybody else he links up with is that antagonizer, the person that kind of pulls it out of him. But it's always an unintentional way, because it's not like it's a purposeful, hey, we're going to use him to bounce the jokes off. It's he really doesn't know what's going on. So it takes other people to kind of drag him and pull him out to be like, oh, hey, what about this thing? Or, hey, what about that thing? Almost like an improv scene where they just keep trying to yes and it and help him move along to get to the next part.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Got to do a lot of yes-ending with Leonard.
Yeah, and then this scene ends with it's another instance of truncating this repeated scene. with him going to Natalie's door. Because the first time that we saw this, we see him chirp the car lock and pace an extra couple times through the window, and those moments are cut out of this time. So it's, you know, about, you know, maybe 3 seconds shorter. But the moments that we do see do still match up pretty much exactly from what we saw before, just with, you know, a few seconds taken out here and there.
Which I appreciate.
Yeah. and then that's all I have for this scene. Do either of you have anything else?
I do not.
I kept watching throughout the movie, but in particular this scene, especially because we get to see a different room of the motel. I don't think I've ever stayed in a motel before. It's always just been a hotel. And part of me is like, maybe I should try that mysterious thing where it's like $20 a night and you go somewhere for like a week and you just, you know, live somebody else's life altogether and then come home to, you know, a little more normality. But then I'm like, nah, it's a little too weird. I'll just enjoy this movie instead.
Yeah, that sounds about right. But thank you, Nick, for joining us for this episode and for the next few weeks here. And, and why don't you go ahead and take a little bit of time and let everybody know where else they can find you online.
Yeah, man, you can kind of find me everywhere. I've been a kind of podcast guest extraordinaire. I've been on a handful of episodes lately of the Lambcast, the Exploding Helicopter podcast hosted by Will Slater, the Movies, Films, and Flicks podcast hosted by Mark Hoffmeyer. And I also have a small project I'm doing myself called Rehack Radio. You can find it on Mixcloud.com. It's essentially a radio show. It's an hour and a half. I don't talk about movies so much as music. They recently changed some rules on the website, so I kind of have to change how I do my thing. So in the coming weeks, there's going to be a new format. There's going to be a lot more fun. So I look forward to getting that out and having everybody listen to it.
Sounds good. And thank you, as always, Eric, for joining me as my co-host through this season.
Certainly.
And as always, I am Bubba Wheat, and you can find me on Twitter where I'm at Bubba Wheat. You can find this show, It's Time to Rewind, on anchor.fm, as well as anywhere else that you listen to podcasts. We also have a Facebook group, It's Time to Rewind, a time loop group. You can join that and discuss episodes as they come out, as well as have discussions about time loop movies, TV shows in general. And until next time, have I told you about Memento?
Only every time I see you.
You said you needed my help. You know, I've had more rewarding friendships than this one. Although I do get to keep telling the same jokes.